Mara Batali is one of the best-known chefs in this country through his restaurants, cookbooks, and appearances on TV shows like Iron Chef America. He's currently one of the hosts of the new ABC series called The Chew. The restaurants include Babbo, Del Posto, and Otto. And last year, he opened the Marketplace Italy with Joe Bastianich. Mr. Batali's most recent cookbook is Molto Batali, Simple Family Meals. It's published by ICO, and I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show today. Hello.
Happy to be here, as usual.
The recipes in this book, which is all subtitled Simple Family Meals, are mostly grain and vegetable-based. Did you set out to use less meat in this cookbook?
I did. I think Americans have meat at the center of the plate just a little too often and should think about not necessarily not having meat, but having a lot more options and variety on the plate.
So how would that play out at a restaurant where somebody orders a meat dish and then winds up with a dish that has meat in it but is more vegetables? Well, don't they complain?
We don't sell it to them that way. If they want a steak, it's coming with the steak. It's not steak, a little steak in a giant salad. But the fundamental difference in this book from my other ones is this one is all about home cooking. None of these dishes are really on any of my restaurant menus. These are about simple, understanding monthly variations. We say seasonal, but it's 12 chapters, so each month is a different idea.
And that's something that is being pushed more and more by chefs in this area. We see more and more restaurants actually living by those rules, but not everybody. There still are a fair number of people who are putting raspberries in their desserts right now.
Yep, and that's and to their defense, they're at the store. I mean, you know, it's if everything is at the grocery store and it looks good and it looks delicious, even if it's out of season, in fact, you'll realize it's got a huge carbon footprint and it's probably not as delicious as it might be.
But you're suggesting that we actually go to green markets and places where there's a real concern for seasonal? Or what happens if I go to my local produce store and it says, this thing is from California, this thing is from Arizona, I should just not buy it and make sure?
No, I don't think you have to be. I don't think you have to be so strict. I think what you want to do is find a balance in a way that makes your convenience and likelihood of consuming better and more delicious food and put it together in a place where it works out. If you need romaine salad, you want romaine, it's not coming from New York or New Jersey right now, so it's okay.
These are recipes for simple meals, but it was my sense that you assumed anyone using it had something of a cooking background, had some knowledge about cooking.
Well, right. These are not dishes that you just put on the grill and then put a little sauce on the side. There's braising, there's roasting, there's large pieces of meat that involve a little bit more than just picking something up on the way home. And those are kind of the centerpieces of each chapter. But there's quick pastas and there's easy-to-make soups and a lot of vegetable dishes. So it's a very easy book to use, even if you're not entertaining a giant family.
Well, you're all over the place these days. Do you ever find time to cook at home?
I do. I cook breakfast at home every morning for my children. I cook Meatless Monday dinner at home at my house, which is an exploration into the world of vegetarian cooking, which is a lot of fun. The kids are really excited about it. And then I cook either Sunday or Tuesday, depending. Sometimes we have Meatless Monday, and then we have Takeout Tuesday.
But meatless cooking is becoming more and more common in fancy restaurants. We're starting to see total vegetarian tasting menus in some of the best restaurants. Chefs have told me that it's just harder to make food that has a lot of flavor if you don't use at least some meat for flavoring?
Well, I think it depends. If you're looking for the flavor that you recognize, yes. I mean, the three kinds of meat that we eat are beef, lamb, and pork. There's a lot of other things.
Well, you can put chicken stock in
a
vegetarian
stock
dish, but it's not vegetarian then.
Well, I think, though, if we're looking for something that kind of picks our fancy a little bit, there's a lot more vegetables out there that have a lot more variation in texture, color, and flavor. So if you're looking for something to taste similar, yes, you're going to have to put the bacon in it or something.
So I assume you also are getting your kids interested in cooking.
My kids love to cook. My eldest son is actually a scratch baker with no recipes. He can put stuff together that I have no idea how it works.
Wow, because baking usually requires recipes. It involves measurement.
For me, it involves incredible measurement, and I'm a slave to the details of a recipe. He just walks in and starts making stuff up. He understands leavening much better than I do.
Well, cooking at home is different from cooking at a restaurant because you don't have prep chefs, you don't have sophisticated equipment, there's 10 different burners, there's no bain-marie, and you don't have anybody to clean up after you. You could just concentrate on the cooking. How does that work at home? Do you wind up washing your own pots and pans?
I wash my own pots, but I'm also a firm believer in washing the pots as soon as I'm done using it. So by the time it's someone has to do the dishes, like I'll cook and I'll clean, by the time we get ready to sit down, there's nothing left in the sink except for maybe the last pot. And that's probably why people don't mind having me cook.
I'm sure there are lots of reasons people don't mind having you cook. We have recipes posted on our show page at WNYC.org. I went through the book and I was thinking November. In the November chapter, you have a recipe for turnips in green olive pesto. Mm-hmm. I always thought of pesto as something that you serve with pasta.
Right, and the traditional pesto Genovese is exactly that. As you travel around Italy, what you'll find is that there's pesto from Pantelleria called pesto pantesco. This green olive pesto is often where they grow olives, which is almost every one of the 21 regions of Italy. And they serve it as a vegetable condiment. They also serve it as a dipping sauce. So what I did is, this is not by any means trying to pretend that it's 100% authentic or regional Italian cooking. It's the way I cook here.
But I guess a pesto then is any kind of a green with some olive oil and some nuts?
Sure. Or you could make a walnut pesto. You could make a sun-dried tomato pesto. You could make a mint pesto. So there's all different ways of looking at pestos. Basically, it's something vegetable that's ground up, either cooked or raw.
And right now, turnips and other root vegetables are pretty much what we find in season.
Well, they're amongst the only things we'll find in season.
So what does that mean? I'm going to be eating a lot of pumpkin soup?
Well, you could. I mean, you know, the way it is, you balance it out. If you want something fresh and green and salad-y, you get it from somewhere else. But if you could find things that are local and maybe even from a farmer whose name you can actually know, you're doing better for both farming, you're doing better for local regional cooking, and you're doing better for yourself by not spending as much money and perhaps getting something a little bit more nutritious for lack of travel.
We also have broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts.
Sure. All the brassica, all of the cruciferous vegetables are totally in season until the end of January, early February.
And these are all good for us.
They're colon's little broom, my friend. They're good for sweeping out the fat from the prosciutto you had just an hour ago.
Oh, what about the stuff that you're eating with the turkey dinner on Thanksgiving?
Exactly. The sweet potatoes with the mashed marshmallows on top. All delicious. All an integral part of the fundamental understanding of our traditional Thanksgiving.
Do you really put marshmallows in your sweet potatoes?
No, I put pomegranates on top of them. I like pomegranates better. I don't mind looking at marshmallows, though. I think they look very interesting, and in a schmore, they have their exact place.
Well, you grew up in a food family, Italian-American, in the Northwest. Did your family have special foods for the holidays, or did you just go very American?
We had kind of a hybrid. It depends, because we had so many cousins. I literally have 25 cousins. So we would go from one aunt and uncle's house one year to another aunt and uncle's house another year. So no one really built a huge traditional repertoire, except for on Thanksgiving you'd have turkey. On Christmas or Easter you'd have ham or lamb. My grandmother, however, made a Christmas Eve all-fish menu. And that was the thing that you could really count on, the fact that it smelled really weird when you walked into her house because she'd been poaching polenta with this bacala, the salt cod. It smelled like she had ground up someone's old socks.
But turkey, actually, I've heard, there's a Sicilian recipe for turkey with chocolate sauce. It's kind of a very new world thing, but it's because the Spaniards brought it into Sicily.
Right. Do
people eat a lot of turkey in Italy?
I think they don't have it so much for a special. They have it much more often as a regular protein, and they'll take little scallopini. They won't roast a whole bird as often, but they'll grind it up and make it into meatballs, or they'll slice it into making it a little paillards, but they're eating a lot of turkey right now.
My guest is Mario Batali, whose latest cookbook, how many have you written so far?
Number nine.
This one is called Molto Batali. We've had Molto Mario in the past. Simple Family Meals from My Home to Yours. It's published by Echo, and even the name of that publishing company sounds Italian.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. The book also raises awareness about the Mario Batali Foundation. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. I decided about 2.5 years ago to start a foundation to really help focus. A lot of restaurateurs are asked just about 100 or 200 times a year. Or 100 or 200 times a week, in my case, to contribute to someone's local charity. And we love to do it, and we're all about it. And what I realized is at a certain point I was creating or helping people raise up to about $5 or $6 million a year. So I thought, well, what way could I use this to my best advantage? And that's to help focus it on something that is maybe a little bit more specific. So what I built the foundation to help is children's hunger relief, children's disease research, and literacy guarantee. So that gives us a focus and a way to kind of get more bang for the buck as we start to work things through.
Do you think that people in the hospitality business have a responsibility?
Incredible.
In this area?
Oh, absolutely. And they have also the means and the capabilities. It doesn't cost nearly as much for us to make something and deliver it to an event than it would be if you had to try to buy it at retail. So the upmarket sale is really an opportunity.
Well, you are also, most of your business, because you have upscale restaurants, is with the people who don't need any charity.
Well, no, but they're all very interested in fundraising somehow because they figured out that in their comfort, they have also a responsibility to help figure things out.
Before we go on to some of the other things in this book and the Chew, can you clarify the story that made newspaper headlines last week?
I was at a panel of really smart people, including Brian Williams and Seth Meyers and Jesse Eisenberg and Anita Hill. And we were talking about who we should like for Time Man of the Year. The beginning of the discussion was, did it have to be a man? No. Did they have to be alive? No. Could it be a group? Yes. Could there be bad guys involved? And the discussion was, yes, there's bad guys. I said, well, I noticed that you've also had Hitler and Stalin as your man of the year, as the person who most likely changed or shaped the news stories of the year. I said at that point, well, I got to say that some people at the top somewhere making decisions in the banking world, and I've more clearly pointed to Europe because they're going to feel it quicker, might be nominated for the bad guy part of it. Not that I have a problem with bankers. I know that Americans and bankers in general are predominantly a hardworking group of people, but there's been some bad decision-making, both on the consumer side but also on the banker side. And I thought that in terms of what really changed the news this year, it's the way the industry has kind of morphed and how they're dealing with what it is. It got looped into the fact that I had compared them to Hitler and Stalin, which is absolutely not.
And people were saying you're biting the hand that feeds you. And all
right, and there was going to be a boycott of my restaurants. And at the end of the day, I'm accountable for what I say, and I'm not saying it's a bad. I was schleffed off by somebody in the PR world. I said what I said, but if you were in the room, there was no way you would have thought that I was comparing the two groups.
And let me make a prediction. If people decide to boycott you, it'll last for a month, 2 months, even a year. You'll do okay. Restaurants are great restaurants.
It's not that I'm worried about the restaurants. I am worried about people thinking that I say stupid off-the-cuff remarks like that on purpose, as if I've decided to make economic policy one of my big issues. And in fact, it is not my issue at all. I'm a good cook. That's all I got. That's what I do.
Now, you have 18 restaurants and a television show, The
Yes,
Chew,
co-hosting
that. How is that different from all the other cooking shows out there?
Well, it's different in that we make fresh food and fresh TV every day. It's taped live to tape. It's fun. It's about fabric. It's about the fabric of food in the way that it's perceived now, not only as pop culture, but as a way to be healthy, a way to be fun, a way to enjoy things. It's about the joy around the table. That is not that much different than anyone else's cooking show. But the fact that we have the five of us together means it's very fresh. It's not magazine style per se, but you can see that there's a lot of energy and that we're really having a good time. And I never would have chosen the five people that are in the show together because we never knew each other before. But I must say, in the 7 weeks that we've been on, we've gelled like a family, and we are having so much fun. I think it's a really great opportunity.
Well, we've seen in recent years two different kinds of approaches, both on the television shows and in cookbooks. One is restaurant food made simple or available through recipes, sometimes not so simple,
right,
by celebrity chefs.
Right.
And then this other thing, which is the sort of thing that we have in this book, which is chefs who really know how to cook saying, I want to present simple meals, show you how to make really tasty stuff at
right.
home.
Well, that's kind of what this show's about. This show feels that way in that we're shopping seasonally. We're talking about dishes that don't take too long to make. We're talking about things that have a certain value and that they're not really expensive to make. And we're all kind of putting them out there with each of our own individual twists.
You're also trying to encourage people to try different things. For example, in this book, I was interested in your recipe for salsify frittella. Salsify is popular in Italy as salsifica,
mm-hmm.
but can you find it in the local market?
It's at the local green market this week. You go to the Union Square Green Market, you'll find salsify. But if you couldn't find salsify, you could certainly substitute burdock root. And if you couldn't find that, you could go to parsnips or carrots.
You say you should fry the fritters for a few minutes on each side and then put them in the oven. What advantage does using the oven have over just continuing to fry them?
Well, the idea that intimidates a lot of people is having all of the food ready at the same time and understanding that there's certain things that need to be ministrated at the very last minute, and there's other things that you can do even an hour in advance and they won't really suffer. That is probably the biggest problem I hear when I talk to home cooks who are trying to put together one of these menus of five or six items, and they're not really sure what can just rest and really not suffer.
And roasting root vegetables, you don't really have to worry about whether you put them in for an hour or 2 hours. You can leave them there for a long
time.
Right,
you can get them very crispy and they're
still
very
delicious. They just get
sweeter. Exactly.
So you could just let them cook until everything else is done and pull them out of the oven.
Right, and then also, or cook them in advance and throw them in the oven at the last minute after you've taken the roast out to let it rest. One of the big things about big meat pieces is understanding that directly out of the oven, if you cut something, its juices are still moving too quickly, they will leave the roast. So you take something out, you let it rest on the counter for 25, 30 minutes, throw everything else in the oven and just kind of reheat it or cook it at the last minute, then carve and go.
Because that is a concern. It's going to get cold.
Right, exactly. Well,
and people tell me sometimes, I like my food really hot.
Well, if you put it on a really hot plate that you've left in the oven as well, a perfectly roasted medium rare leg of lamb, having started only at 125 internal anyway, has gone down to maybe 110 as it rests. You put it on a hot plate, it tastes really hot.
You're encouraging here the use of fresh vegetables, but let's talk about some of the other things that we have to buy. There's total confusion when it comes to something like extra virgin olive oil. You can get a certain size in your local supermarket for $5, and then you can go to a specialty store, a place like Eataly, and it can run big bucks.
25 or 30 bucks, easy for a jar, no question.
So how different are they?
The best thing to do is go and taste at a store. And a store that's going to charge you $30 for a bottle of olive oil should let you open it up and taste it to see if it's worth it. The way we look at it is we buy a commercial one for $5 or $10, and we do all of our cooking in extra virgin olive oil. Then we buy a fancier one, maybe from a specific region, that's where the dish is born. I want to use a Ligurian oil when I make pesto. I want to use a Tuscan oil when I'm doing my steak with the spinach saute. What you want to do is go find them and taste one that matches your palate, because then you'll more personalize the cooking that you do at your house.
But the big problem is once you open the olive oil, it starts deteriorating, so you want to use it up. You can't, if you have five or six different ones.
Right, so you really need to choose two. One that you're going to work with all the time and one that you're going to finish with. Maybe you have 2 liter bottles open, but I mean, if you're using an ounce a day, your life is improving radically.
Then there's a whole matter of pastas. Some people think that only fresh pastas are good, but in Italy, people use a lot of dry pasta.
In Italy, they eat dried pasta every day and fresh pasta when they go to someone's house for some special occasion or out to a restaurant. They're both delicious. Dried pasta is certainly more economical and is also just a little bit often. The tendency is not to oversauce nearly as much as with a fresh pasta.
And also you get it more al dente. Than
right. It's got that crunchy texture that we love.
What about when you're using fresh tomatoes or canned tomatoes? You've encouraged in the past people to use fresh tomatoes. But most recipes call for taking crushed tomatoes mm-hmm. out of a can, don't they?
Well, we love fresh tomatoes in August, September, October, and into the beginning of November. We will take fresh tomatoes from even somewhere like Florida or Georgia and roast them slowly for 3 or 4 hours with a little salt on them to give them some kind of acidity that's really nice. But predominantly, Italians use canned tomatoes all year round, and they use fresh tomatoes only in salads.
And then there's a whole matter of price with those kinds of things as well. We assume that if the one can costs $1, it's not as good as the other can that costs $5.
The trick is more interested in finding the varietal of the tomato. The San Marzano, the actual variety, not the place itself, is the really good tomato. And they grow some very interesting ones in California that are subsequently less expensive. It's all about taste, though. Open the can, taste it, and see if it tastes and reminds you of a tomato. Then you're good.
Are you surprised by how much things have changed in Italian food in this country? When I was a kid, a restaurant would be veal parmesan. Maybe they'd have a pizza. Maybe they have veal scallopini and a few other very brajole, right. A few other very basic dishes. Now, Italian restaurants are, well, it depends on what region the restaurant
right.
represents. You have 18.
Yes.
And that means an awful lot of different things.
Right.
Have we become much more sophisticated?
I think Americans in general have become much more sophisticated across the board, not only gastronomically, but they've traveled a lot. So they understand what to expect. Italian food used to be pizza, spaghetti, and lasagna. Now we understand the difference between puglia and basilicata. It's another world out there.
You were on The Simpsons last night?
I was on The Simpsons last night.
Did they have you in your Crocs and shorts?
In my Crocs and shorts on a bouncing exercise ball, chasing somebody around, saying something about how Homer was a great guy.
Well, you are, it's chilly out, but you came here in your shorts and Crocs. Do you
Absolutely.
Ever wear long trousers?
The rule at my house is the kids have to wear long pants if it's 45 degrees or lower when they go to school. The rule for me is 30.
Mario, by the way, will be signing books at Eataly this Friday at 2 o'clock. That's at 205th Avenue at 23rd Street. The book is Molto Batali, Simple Family Meals from My Home to Yours. It's published by Echo, and we have some recipes on our website at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us,
Thanks
Mario.
Thanks for having me again, Leonard. It's great to be here.